You need to own your style because it's your style. It's a full expression of who you are. So as you listen to this story, some might say that, oh my God, you're changing to fit outer game conceptions, societal conceptions or cultural conceptions of what someone who is rich does or is. You are changing to become someone you are not. Well, you could look at it this way. You could approach it with that as the framework that you are making buying decisions about your clothing or your how you do your hair or where you shop based on some sort of fear of judgment about yourself, that you didn't like yourself. And to be honest, there is some truth here for me in this story. I don't think it was a cultural manipulation in my case, but you can't take that out completely. We live within the context of the culture. And sure enough, there's a ton of cultural manipulation of women. This is not going to be a podcast that goes through an expose of that. There is obviously a lot of ways that the world, the ad industry, the marketing industry, the fashion industry tells you what you should look like, right? So there are a lot of cases where Hollywood, where the ad industry tells you through marketing what is, you know, sexy and beautiful and on trend and all of that. And that has an impact on everyone. So it certainly didn't have no impact on me, but I do have a different lens through which I see that you have desires and those are calling you forward and you will resonate with the true desires for yourself. And you don't need to worry about whether that is manipulation or something outside of yourself that is causing you to make choices that you don't like if you are living in the truth of your desire. So if you're truly owning your desires and saying, actually, that turns me on, or actually, that I really like, then you're not at effect. You're not being manipulated. You are making a conscious decision, a conscious choice. Ooh, I like that and I want that. And you know that there's a difference there when it's coming from desire versus coming from fear. Fear of I'm going to be left out. Fear I'm not going to be liked. Fear of not fitting in or being judged. Those are fear-driven decisions that really are quite indicative of probably being manipulated by outside elements. Now, I started to say here that there is some truth to the fact that I did have an internal judgment of not liking myself. And that is 100% true. It's not everything that drove this, but there was an element of not liking myself, but not from a place of, how do I say this, personal rejection, but from a place of, I really want to be this. This is the image I have of myself. This is who I know myself to be, and how I'm showing up now is not that. How do we resolve that? How do we reconcile that? But I was in judgment of the things that weren't aligned instead of just being neutral about it and saying, actually, I don't want that anymore. Let's let go of that and let's step into who you want to be. Call that in. So you have to look at why it wasn't safe to own what I actually wanted. Because if in the beginning it had been safe to own what I actually wanted, there wouldn't have been a huge amount of self-judgment around it. I wouldn't have been in confusion around it. So we have to look at where that confusion comes from. And for me, that confusion came from how I was raised. And I'm going to share a few of the double binds that were keeping me small as I moved into adulthood. So one of them came from my relationship with my father. And that was a double bind that said it wasn't safe to be absolutely friggin' beautiful, gorgeous, and rocking your beauty and be smart, okay? Be intelligent in this world. That it wasn't safe to spend money on your beauty, right? On the things that required money personally, like clothing, like facials, like nails, like your hair. And it wasn't good to spend time on that, time adorning yourself, time picking out your jewelry, time picking out how you want to do your hair, how you want to do your makeup, that took away from being powerful in this world, smart, confident. And I really got that story from my father. And I believe that it was his story of seeing women who made their beauty a priority, trapped in relationships with men that took care of them. And that those women, that he didn't want me to not have financial freedom in this world, not have the ability to take care of myself, which he saw directly related to being educated and smart in this world. And he didn't want me to land in a place where I was trapped that way. Now, this is a huge confluence of ideas that if you are beautiful in and you rock that beauty and you take care of yourself by spending time on your outer looks, right? Doing your hair, putting on makeup, rocking beautiful clothing, picking out your clothing, that you are by definition not going to be spending time on your intelligence, your business, your ability to intellectually understand the world, and quite frankly, your ability to call in money so that you have the resources to do whatever you want. Those two things are not correlated. You can, and I am living proof of this, and there are many women who are living proof of this, like, love how you're showing up in the outer game of beauty and clothing and all of those things, and be super smart and earn your own money. But when I was growing up, those things were at odds with each other. I was taught directly, but also indirectly, meaning there were underlying judgments of women who showed up in their lives appreciating beautiful cars, appreciating spending time working out, appreciating rocking their bodies and being sexy and showing them off. There was a huge amount of judgment about that. And I learned that. And I learned that it wasn't safe to go after that because one of my parent gods, my father god, would not approve of that. And for better or for worse, that's how I was raised. And I had to unlearn that because that's not the truth of this world. And there were a lot of money stories growing up in LA around a lot of wealth, around a lot of people in Hollywood. The stories were to dismiss the cars and the stories and the boob jobs and the gorgeous attention to clothing and how you looked and all of that. Dismiss that because those people are compromising their lives. They're not valuing the true values of life. And quite frankly, that came from a place, I know this now, of, well, we can't afford that. Let's make that wrong. Instead of, wow, look at these people going for a full expression of themselves, enjoying life, being confident, going after their bigger level desires. Now, I want to be clear that that's not the case for everyone in Hollywood, that there is lots of fear-driven decisions around how you look in Hollywood as well. So there's truth on both sides, but you can't make it a correlated truth, okay? And you have to not live in fear of someone who loves being the full expression of themselves and expressing that through their clothes, through their caring of how they take care of themselves, their personal fitness, how they show up with time and money. And there is a lot of insecurity around this, and insecurity can drive those decisions, or confidence and desire can drive those decisions. So many women, you know, do get trapped in this idea of their beauty is what calls them in, their beauty is what causes them to have security in this world. And they put a lot of energy into that without putting a lot of energy into how to create their own security in this world. And that has to do with owning themselves, personal self-ownership, but also understanding how to create the income that they desire. And that's a big thing. If you do not know how to call in money, you will always be trapped. And I'm not advocating for a being, you know, thinking that you have to show up a certain way in your style in order to get a man's approval. I'm very much not advocating for that. You need to own your style because it's your style. It's a full expression of who you are. So you have to reject this either or thinking, okay? You have to reject this idea that it's either one way or another way. And this was true for me around either or thinking around my sexuality. When I was a teenager, another double bind that came up that I created for myself and experienced in my family growing up was like, it wasn't safe to be sexy because that meant that you had risky relationships. And sure enough, I was a little bit of a wild child as a teenager. Yes, I was getting straight A's, but I was also having a bunch of new sexual experiences. And a lot of those were quite dangerous and unsafe. And I did learn a lot from them, but I also put myself in a lot of positions that weren't particularly safe. And there's probably a lot I could share on that. But for the context of this story, I was rebelling and experiencing that. And then I was mapping that sexuality was unsafe, that you could get hurt there. And I was playing out a double bind. That was also something that I learned from my father, who was trying to do the best with what he had and protect me from sexual relationships that would cause pain and disappointment. And I got a lot of that growing up, like hold off having sex, and sex is, you know, an underlining sense that even though there was a great conversation around sex, there was also underlying conversation that you should hold off, that it was dangerous, that it's risky, that you're going to get hurt, that you could be out of control, that men are out of control, right? All these stories there. And so there was a lot of confusion around that and suppression in how I showed up with my sexuality and how that came out in my self-expression, in my energy, and also in the clothing that I wore. And I went from a little bit of a wild child as a teenager to very much a conservative, I just want to wear comfortable clothes person, where I didn't have a lot of sexual expression in my clothing. I wore a lot of leggings and clogs and sweats and big t-shirts and big sweatshirts. And I was very much in the comfortable clothing camp. And it was the cozy, comfy bunny slipper camp versus the I'm an adult woman with adult needs, and I want to express myself as the beautiful woman that I am camp. So I had to really work through a bunch of double binds on that as well. So I place that as a placeholder there as I go forward and talk to you about this additional piece, which is your self-image. So when you're young, you grow up with these blind spots that are created in out of double bind thinking, that, and I've shared a couple of those with you. And you're also, your self-image also gets locked in your formative years. And that self-image for me was, don't be too beautiful, that's not safe. But don't be too ugly either, that's not approved of. Don't be too sexy, but don't be too plain. Don't be too much, don't be too little. And you could say, I know that many of you will go to that place of like, this is our culture limiting women. And there's truth to that, okay? This is the culture saying, this is how you have to be. But fundamentally, I learned this in my childhood, in my family, in my environment growing up. And that self-image was set very early on. But you know what? It wasn't who I knew myself to be. It wasn't the truth of who I was. And yet that self-image kept getting played out over and over and over again. And I would describe that self-image as a beautiful woman, but an ordinary woman, not someone who was extraordinary, not someone who was really owning her beauty. And someone who was a little disheveled, a little frumpy, a little didn't care, but didn't let her go so far. And I needed to learn how to expand that self-image. So what I started to do was to move outside of those lines, okay, to start living a life that was different than that self-image. And I really had to learn how to do that and understand that I wasn't showing up that way, and I hadn't been most of my life. And clearly I had had plenty of time to show up differently, but I must be programmed not to. Otherwise I would be getting different results because the image of who I wanted to be was so radically different than how I was being. So that self-image was locking me in to only spending a certain amount of time on my style, only spending a certain amount of money on my style. So you got to look at those two things. Those are the two main resources. What are you spending your time and money on? And is it an expression of what you value? Well, clearly it was an expression of what was valued growing up, but it wasn't the expression of who I wanted to be, who that seven-figure business owner was. I had to think about who she wanted to be, what she valued, and did my energy and my outer expression match that? And then were the ways that I was spending my time and my money matching that? And the answers, of course, were no, multiple times no. So I had to start confronting this with simple choices. And they were simple choices, but they were confronting choices, like how I was spending my time and money around my hair, my clothing, my nails, okay? So let's give it a specific example. So for women, hair is very important. Okay. For many women, I shouldn't say for all women, hair is a thing. We have a thing with our hair. And you know, I started to go gray many years ago, and it became more and more significant. And so I started dyeing my own hair, and I would get the hair dye from the drugstore, and I would sit and do my hair. And it was a 2-hour experience, and it was messy, and I had to organize the bathroom and set up the bathroom so I could sit there with my hair being dyed. And I had a whole strategy around it, and I would listen to podcasts, and I would make it work, and I had my notebook out, and I would do work and all of this stuff. And I had a whole story about how I was making it work and how I was so ingenious around this, and I was making great use of the time, and isn't this awesome? And yet I was sitting on the floor of my bathroom, the cold tile bathroom, cold. I never got it right, because even when you put a heater in, it's too hot or too cold, but you can't put the clothing on because you don't want to get the dye on it, yada, yada, yada. And I did this for years and was perfectly fine with it. And then as I started up-leveling my game, I realized that, guess what? A $1 million business owner wasn't doing her hair on the cold bathroom floor. That's not how she was spending her time. So when my hairdresser at the time said, you know, gently, it's time to let me do your hair, she was acknowledging gently how the dye job was not the best dye job, okay? It was a little clunky, to say the least. And she was politely pointing that out and encouraging me to come get my hair done. I said yes. It was a choice, because I was like, can I spend $80 on that? And it, you know, can I spend $110? Can I spend $150? Right? With tip and generosity and, you know, the haircut. And, you know, now I think, I don't know how much it is. It's probably $180 now when I get my hair done. But, you know, at the time I was like, wow, can I spend that money? It was so different than how I was being previously. And I had to make that choice. Now, I know a lot of you probably have been going and getting your hair done for years and spending money on that. And you might think that's a little crazy that I had such a conflict over it. But it was truly a conflict. Can I afford it? Can I do it? And I know a lot of people who are listening are probably listening and thinking, Amira, I can't afford that. I have to do the box dye. And that might be true. But I would encourage you, if some of this is resonating with you, to stretch yourself on these buying decisions. They're small buying decisions. They're not going to cause you to go bankrupt. And like, to feel the resistance and take the action anyway. Feel the resistance, take the action anyway, feel the discomfort of taking that action, and then breathe into it and realize that you didn't die. And to keep doing those smaller level decisions as you do the bigger level decisions at the same time. So some of those bigger level decisions for me were hiring a mentor that was a very large investment. It was the investment of a mortgage on that a multi-million dollar business owner would have. It was the flying first class, right? Those were much larger expenditures, but I had to keep the outer game expenditures going as I was mapping this to the inner game growth that I was doing with my mentor, to work through the blind spots, work through the double binds, work through the stories, and doing the scaling work in my business. So I want to be super abundantly clear. Buying pretty clothes, getting your hair done, getting your nails done, flying first class isn't what calls in more money in your life. But because you have to do the work in your career or your business to actually have the money come in, okay? Yet when I started to experience life from that next level of style and beingness, financial beingness, even before I truly had the money, I started to take different actions based on being that person. So I would walk through the airport feeling like a million freaking bucks, having my hair and nails done, rocking my pretty clothes, confidently having moved through the inner game blocks and sitting in first class. I would get brilliant ideas for next level things in my business. I would get more done in first class, okay, than I ever had gotten done before. The opportunities kept coming in. I'd meet new people and I would act on them. So there's a relationship there, but it's not just buy the pretty clothes and stare at your belly button and don't take action. You do actually have to break through on the inner game, your thinking, and you actually have to learn how to think differently and not be afraid of those expenditures in order to not only step forward in your style, but step forward in your business, okay? So what else do I want to say here? There was a whole series of things that I had to work through from a style perspective. And only some of them required financial expenditure. Like I had to let go of a bunch of weight because what I was seeing in photos in the outer game was not how I saw myself with my inner eye. And I then had to do the work to let go of that weight. And that required changing my self-image about who I was, because this is something that I teach at our Unstoppable Woman virtual and in-person income breakthrough summits. The cybernetic mechanism that we have, this is the mechanism that drives us to repeat and land at the same, repeat the conditioning, the programming, to land at the same target over and over again. Now, our self-image is that target. If my self-image says, I am someone who is a little bit pudgy, slightly overweight, a little bit disheveled, not too pretty, not too out of the pretty order, I will keep repeating that over and over again. That's my self-image. And the cybernetic mechanism is the mechanism that allows you not to get too out of line with that self-image. So it's like a thermostat that's set at 70 degrees. When you get to 73 degrees, you can't go above that. It'll bring you back down to 70. When you go to 64, it'll bring you back up to 70. And your cybernetic mechanism wants to keep you at your particular self-image, not too bold in your style and not too bland in your style. And that's what I was doing over and over and over again until I changed my self-image. And I did that through working through my double binds and my blind spots and taking the actions to become the seven-figure business owner. But I also did it by taking those outer game actions of scaling my business to become a seven-figure business owner. But I also took the actions to become the seven-figure business owner I had in my mind's eye. She dressed like a million friggin' bucks. She didn't dress in a disheveled way. She showed up put together in the world. And so I had to raise that self-image and hold it clear in my mind, even when my cybernetic mechanism was saying, don't buy that. Don't spend money on that. Don't spend time putting on your makeup this morning or doing your hair. Don't hold yourself like that. Just slump and, walk through the airport in a depressed fashion. No, I had to choose over and over again who I was being. And that's so important. I had to actually take the actions in the face of my conditioning saying, no, go here to this lower self-image. I had to take action in direct conflict with that. That meant buying the more expensive jewelry, buying the more expensive clothing, acting confidently, even when I wanted to crawl up in a hole, walking through the airport with energy, not with, oh my God, I'm so overwhelmed by all this traveling, making all those small decisions, right? I've already talked about hiring, you know, someone to do my hair, but you know, then it was hiring hair and makeup for events. Then it's hiring higher and higher level professional photographers. You know, it's continually up leveling your style. And in the beginning, I didn't know what my style was. I actually had to hire experts to help me with that. And that was some of the best experiences of my life. I went to Neiman's in Chicago and I was terrified to go shopping there. The first time I went there, I went with a personal shopper that I hired, and like, it was like a security blanket. And I realized that, oh, there are all types of people here, and the people who work here are not obnoxious. Some of them are, but not all of them. And I'll be treated very well here. Isn't that interesting? I had no idea. But one of the best decisions I made was to build a relationship with someone who worked at Neiman Marcus. Her name is Jamie. She's now moved on to a different store, which I'm slightly sad about, but she's still fabulous. And she had a great sense of style, and I knew nothing about style. And I went in there, and she would just show me different things, and she would push my comfort zone just a little bit. But I was confronted at the time because I couldn't fit into all the clothes that I wanted. And we had to do a lot of making it work. Okay, this style doesn't work for you. Try this style. Because I was really about 30 pounds overweight at the time. And I mean, she helped me and she made it work. But it was in shopping for those new clothes that I really wanted, in wanting to go and rock the stage at my events looking great. That's why I went shopping at Neiman's initially, was for these events. Like, okay, this is a great opportunity to step it up with my style. And I had to like make it work. And it wasn't who I wanted to be. So I went on the path to let go of the 30 pounds, and I did that. And then I started training for a marathon, and I had to change my self-image around that I was actually an athlete. I'm still working on that, guys. I still every day work on my image of being an athlete. But in the process of doing that, I let go of 30 pounds, and I could then walk into Neiman's and fit into the size 4 off the rack, and that felt awesome. The other thing that I know now about from shopping at Neiman's is that to look like $1 million, even if you fit the actual size, you always get it tailored. You always get it tailored. You want the clothes to fit immaculately. So that's just part of the process. And they have, you know, the tailor come in and it's done in a few days and you pick it up and you look like $1 million. What service? That's an up leveling. That feels really good. Anyways, Jamie would bring me things that would push the edge of my style. And what I was wearing initially and buying initially has changed, and I've evolved. She taught me that you can rock a dress. She taught me to be a little edgier in the kind of zippers. And actually, you can wear that sexy shirt. And she kept pushing my edges over the years. And I'm so incredibly grateful for her. And I would go and I would go to Chicago, and I would spend pretty much 2 days shopping with her. And I would drop multiple five figures on clothing on these shopping trips. And initially, in the beginning, I would look at the clothing and decide whether I wanted to try it on based on how much it looked like on the price tag. I would be like, that's a $800 thing. I don't think I'm going to try that on. Or that's a $2,000 thing. I'm not going to try that on. But I got to the place, guys, where I could walk in. I'd be like, I don't like that style. I don't like that. I don't like that. Let's not try that on. Okay, I'm going to try that. Maybe that looks great. And I would only try on things that I thought I would love, or that Jamie was saying, you know, I really just want you to try this. It doesn't look good on the hanger, but I think you're going to rock it. And I would do that before I looked at the price tag. And then we would get through the whole shopping experience, and I hadn't looked at the price tags yet. And I would have it lined up, and I'd be like, okay, these are the three things for the event. These are the things I need for just personal life living. Do I want all of these? Am I in my yes 100% on all of them? Because one of the things I've learned, and many people learn this over the years, is if you're not in your 100% on it, if you're in and like, I'm trying to make it work, it's not a, it, don't buy it. Don't buy it. There's no scarcity in the world. Don't buy it. You'll find something that else that's great. So I would look and say, what is my yes? And then, and only then, I would look at the price tag. Sometimes I wouldn't look at the price tag. I would just give her my credit card at the register and think to myself, okay, unless that's like more than X, we're all good here. You know, if it was three items and I had spent $50,000, I would question that, right? You know, there would be a like, wait, something's not adding up for me here. That wasn't what I was expecting. So there you go. So that's the shopping experience. And I had a lot of fun with that, guys. I had a lot of fun with that. Now I shop online, mostly because of COVID, but also because I've learned my style, which is so great. I can look and go, that's going to look great. That's going to look great. That's going to look great. And I fit into the clothes that are more or less, not always, not 100%, are my size. And that feels great. So I've really up-leveled from that perspective. But that took, that was a 4-year process, guys. Okay. That was not overnight. And I'm still in process around that. I still have goals around, my fitness levels and all of that. So a big aspect of this that I've mentioned is who did I want to be? And I mentioned, this in the framework of who did I want to be in relation to that million-dollar, multi-million-dollar business owner? And that's one of the assignments that I often give my clients. It's like, who is that woman? How does she show up? And I ask them to come up with role models for themselves. Who are those women who are actually embodying the way you know who you know yourself to be, but you haven't yet stepped into? And for me, I did that both from a business perspective, but also from a personal life perspective, and who I wanted to be in my relationships, like the whole me, not just the business side of me. So personal life and business life. And, you know, I scanned my memory banks and found examples in movies about the type of women type of woman I wanted to be. And I highly suggest you do this. You can do this with people in movies. So the characters in movies, you can do it with actual actors or people that you're following. You can do it with business icons. You can do it with pop stars. You can do it with people you know in your environment, in your career, like who have been people and women that you admire. Look and find the qualities in them that you are attracted to and start articulating that for yourself. So for me, I thought, who is that woman that I want to be that I'm not quite fully expressing yet? And I came up with two women, Susan Sarandon and Renee Russo, particularly in The Thomas Crown Affair, which is such a great movie. And I really loved, they were strong women. They were fully sexually expressed. And they were smart, and they were models for me of what was the contradiction for me growing up. And I needed that model to show me someone who was like smart and sexy, smart and like beautiful and rocking their beauty and fully self-expressed, right? So who are your models? That would be a good one for you to find. So I had to find those and then start living that out. Start living that out. Now, some might see this again as someone changing to become someone who they're not, like in order to please the world out there. And that's not it, because I could have chosen a different model. Everyone's going to have their own unique model of where they're going. And I believe, well, I know it's not just a belief. I know that desire is causative. I didn't desire to be like that if it wasn't based on the truth of who I am, because desire is always calling you forward. That's the law of polarity. It's saying everything is created as a whole. There are no halves. So if I have that desire, okay, that's out there. The other half is inside of me. It's the truth of who I am wanting to be expressed, and I need to complete that. I need to grow into it in order to represent that full desire in this 3D world, to fully express that in this 3D world. And I think this is what's missing for a lot of women. We want to be the full expression of ourselves, but we're not owning that desire. And so you have to see, what is it that you truly want? And what is a true expression of that? Claim that, own that, and then take the actions to live that out, step by step. Now, everything that I've said in terms of action-wise, you know, like running, walking a marathon was an action that I took. Buying cute workout clothes was an action that I took. The hair and makeup, all of that were actions that I took. Those were the actions that were aligned with my style, my full expression, my desires. This is not a podcast that is advocating that you do exactly what I did in terms of the choices in clothing or the choices in action. But it is advocating you to step forward into your desires and to be who you know yourself to be, and to be a full expression of who you are. And the truth is, I had to let go of who I wasn't in order to step into who I am, who I was. I had to let go of who I wasn't in order to step into who I am. And that is the truth for everyone. And it didn't happen overnight. I continue to choose, and it doesn't stop. It's choice after choice after choice, step by step by step, as fast as I could, even when it felt scary, even when the stories came up, the questioning came up. Can I afford that? Can I purchase that? Who do I think I am doing this? The fear of judgment, because it will come up. It comes up through other people. People will judge you. Oh, aren't you special wearing that beautiful coat? Aren't you all that and more? I got a ton of that. And I'm sure many people listening to this are probably judging me and talking about the materialistic qualities of this. Sure, we live in a world that is material. It's not spiritual in its entirety, right? We are spiritual beings having a human experience. And in this experience, there are material things. I want to enjoy the material world. I don't judge that. But I understand that people do. And I had to step forward despite that. And many of those judgments were in my head. Many of those judgments were said out loud. They were said out loud by my family. And you have to be okay with that. Now, in full, transparency of my family, there was judgment, but there was also support, okay? So their stories came up, but their celebrations came up. So I only rent a compact car when I rent, as I pull up in my luxury Mercedes. And then I could have previously taken that to be something that was cutting and about me and that I was doing something wrong, because that's how I would have taken it just a few years ago. I would have been so scared of that kind of comment. And notice that it's like just a like what I would do, right? Or this is how I do things. But your soft underbelly says, no, don't judge me over that. That's a judgment. When in fact, it's just a statement. But I had to grow into that level of confidence. And really, in the next breath, my mother said, but this is a gorgeous car. This is lovely, right? Okay, so she also appreciated it. And I was then in a place where, you know, I could handle it. But when I was first starting my journey, a comment like that, I had to protect myself from, because I was too tender. It was too new. I wasn't confident in my decisions to spend money in the way I wanted to spend money. So you have to work through all of this as you go about your journey. And it is a journey of personal growth. It is a journey of financial growth, understanding what you have to do in your business to scale so you have the income and the cash flow to live at the level that you want to live at and to be the full expression of who you want to be. It's growing your personal development, being a full expression of who you want to be. It is scaling your business, and it's making a bunch of 1,001 decisions on your personal style side of things so that you are actually making choices in time and money to be that person. Now, I haven't spent a ton of time talking about the time decisions, and I will close this out by sharing just a brief nod to that. I had to look at how I was spending my time in relationship to that self-image. My self-image said it wasn't valuable to spend time shopping for clothes or getting dressed in the morning or paying attention to how things look together or putting on your makeup or choosing your jewelry or even having jewelry. So I had to spend the time shopping. I had to spend the time traveling to Chicago to pick out clothes. I had to spend the time online. I had to spend the time getting dressed in the morning, even if no one was going to see me, and so on and so forth. So that those were learned skills. I didn't come up with that. Now, I didn't grow up with that. Many of you did, so that might not be your story, but my story was rush, 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 throw it together, don't spend time on yourself, and, you know, that's it. That's the way it goes. Everything else and everyone else was much more valuable. So this was a real act of valuing myself, an act of self-worth. And now I get dressed fairly quickly in the morning, but in a way that is both quick and valuing myself, because I figured out how I love to rock clothes, like what I want to wear. I rock it out. I pick it out very quickly. My closet's full of clothes I love. There's not a lot of noise or confusion there. And I've gone to girl school, which is what I laugh about. Having hired a lot of hair and makeup people for events and photo shoots, I'm always asking them questions about how to do things and buying product and, you know, products that they recommend. And I've gotten much better at like getting dressed in the morning very quickly and knowing how to rock it out. But that was because I invested in experts and took action on it. Okay, the way I want to wrap up this episode is to share a little bit about my process of going through those up-levelings in my outer expression of my style. So let's take flying first class, and because that was an expression of who I wanted to be, and it was a style. I wanted to fly in style, guys. So first I had to make First, I had to become aware that I could be someone who did that. And I heard my mentor say over and over again, back of the car, front of the plane, fly first class, right? Like, this is the way to do it. And he got that from his mentor. And this was like, you won't earn the money until you have a reason for the money. And I was trapped, guys. I could not pull the trigger on that for the longest time. I was like, okay, I don't get this. And yet the person who was teaching me and I was learning from had different results than I did. And I wasn't getting the results I wanted. So I was like, I'm going to do what he tells me because the way I'm doing it isn't getting the results I want. But to be frank, to be honest, I was terrified of pulling the trigger. So first, I just had to become aware of what I wasn't aware of, which is this idea that you have to spend money from the place you want to be, not from the place you are. So a level of awareness there that calls you forward. Then I had to acknowledge being scared and being afraid of the judgment around it and do it anyway. So I bought that first ticket and I was terrified of doing it, stepping into that action. But I did it anyway. And then I was terrified getting on the plane. Well, terrified would be too strong of a word, but I was definitely in a fear of judgment of, I don't belong here. They're all going to find out that I don't belong here. I don't know the protocols of first class and that they're going to think that I'm lesser than. And who are these people? I don't even know who they are and I'm giving them power over me. It was fascinating as a process. So I had to do it anyway. And I was looking around and I was being completely reactive. I was looking at the other people in first class and thinking, okay, how do they do it? They must know how to do it. They're rich, and trying to be like them, but not from a healthy perspective, but from a fear perspective, because I was just looking at everyone, not looking at the people I actually wanted to be. And as I flew first class more and more, I saw that, hey, guess what? It's kind of obvious. Rich people come in all shapes and sizes. So I started recognizing, oh, this person is fully in their self-expression and is not standing on ceremony. Look at how they're expressing themselves, right? And I really studied people. And then I went back to who I wanted to be and I started being that person in the act of flying first class. It didn't take long, guys, only a few times to get me there. But that was my process. And I really had to look at what I needed to sacrifice and what I wanted to call in. And so I had to rapidly let go of those insecurities and call in confidence and strength. I had to rapidly let go of the things that weren't serving me, the kinds of bags that I was traveling with, right? And call in what I wanted. And it's a constant process of sacrificing what you don't want, but filling it concurrently with what you do want and being very intentional and conscientious about that. So you want to put yourself in situations where you can experience a little bit of discomfort about the experience that you're having, about being in that new wealthy lifestyle, being an expression of that. And I consistently did that over and over and over again, whether it was with flying first class or staying at the Ritz, right? That was an expression of my style. Now I was someone who stayed at the Ritz. Oh my God, who is that? Who is that? I didn't know who that was. Who is someone who stays at the Ritz? Well, it turns out there are lots of different people who stay at the Ritz because, you know, money doesn't make you a good or a bad person. It doesn't make you someone who has great style or who doesn't have great style. It amplifies who you already are. So I have a very poignant experience of having breakfast at the Ritz in Montreal. It's a gorgeous Ritz, beautiful, well worth staying there. And there's a beautiful atrium where you can sit. And it was this gorgeous snowy day over the Christmas holidays. And it was stunning. And I was sitting there having breakfast and it was filled with a variety of different people in there, from individual travelers to families to rock and roll types, the whole gamut. And it was beautiful and it was peaceful. And then this woman sat down at this table and she had great like rock and roll style, but she treated the staff so poorly. Everything was loud and everything was a complaint and she was obnoxious and she was disrespectful. And you could tell she was coming from such a place of insecurity. And everyone there was a bit uncomfortable with how obnoxious she was being. The staff handled it with ease and grace, but she was obnoxious. She was your greatest fear of like the obnoxious rich person. And you could focus on that. And you could say, see, look, rich people are obnoxious. I don't want to be like that. Count me out. But that would be just affirming what your biggest fear is. If you actually looked at the rest of the restaurant, 80% of the other people that were there, or the 90% of the other people that were there, you would realize most rich people are super respectful. They're incredibly generous, good people that you'd love to hang out with. So what are you going to focus on? And this is a choice. You get to choose what your self-expression is going to be. And money just allows you to do more of that. So for me, that intersection is a really powerful intersection. And I invite you all to step into it. You know, that intersection of learning how to make more money in your business, releasing the double binds and blocks so that you can be a full expression of yourself, and starting to do that on the outer game level in your style, what you spend money on and what you spend time on. With that, I'm Amira Alvarez. Thanks for joining me for another episode of the Unstoppable Woman podcast.
Thank you so much for joining us and for being a part of the Unstoppable Woman movement. I want to let you know that we've got a ton of free resources for you for scaling your business at theunstoppablewoman.com/free stuff. Please go ahead and check those out. And we'd also love your help in getting the message out. Share this podcast with all the unstoppable women in your life, your friends, your colleagues, your business besties. Please do that. And if you're game, we'd super duper duper appreciate a review on iTunes as well. Thanks so much, and be unstoppable.